Good morning. I did just add a comment or two about the visitors that Char mentioned. Albany Church contacted the PNMC churches to say, hey, could you send us your link? Because now would be a great time to go church visiting, because we don't have to leave the house. So they're taking this week off and going church visiting. We don't know whether anybody's here or not, but they're out there in internet land. And I mentioned this by way of saying, you know, it is a neat opportunity to go and spend time and experience our brothers and sisters, both within the conference and really around the country or even out of the country. And that might be something you want to look for. So I actually have most of the arrangements for most of the PMC churches from week to week. And so if you're interested, let me know and we can make that connection. When I passed this verse off to Char, she said, ha, that's ambitious. Because it's one of these core verses of Jesus' teaching and of reality that is at our core, but also really, really complicated. It keeps popping up time and again, usually in that nice little nugget of the truth shall set you free. And that starts appearing even in, of all places, the headquarters of the CIA, which I'm not quite sure was the original intent of Jesus' speaking, but so be it. But truth and how we tell it is central to our lives and to the life of the kingdom. So let's hear the words of John in that way. This is John chapter 8, verses 31 through 38. Then Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. They answered him, we are the descendants of Abraham, and we have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean by saying you will be made free? Jesus answered them, truly, I tell you, anyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. Slaves do not have a permanent place in the household. The Son has a place that is there forever. So if the Son makes you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are descendants of Abraham, yet you will look for the opportunity to kill me because there is no place in you for my word. I declare what I have seen in my Father's presence. As for you, you should do what you have heard from Yahweh God. I think I know how to make this morning a somewhat uncomfortable experience. And that would be to invite you to take a moment's silence to consider those sins that you hold the closest. They're true about you, but are not what you commonly say or commonly share. Even if I didn't go ahead and say, all right, say it out loud, I'm guessing that silent minute would be a shifty one. And what's there? And come to that, I'm guessing you don't need the minute either, because I'm guessing there's a thing or two in your head already. The somewhat guilty pleasure that makes you feel a little bit silly. Or the incidents of our lives that we just assume not speak about, or the things that we try really, really, really hard to forget. Not to worry. My purpose today isn't to drag these out of you. That's not the point. But I start here because it is where we fundamentally start with the truth. There is that within us and about us that is complicated and hard. And while it may be the truth, it's not what we like to tell, what we like to do, and along the rest. Because we're always constructing our truth in its shades and variations and partialities. It's what we do because that's what we need to do to get on with our lives. We do this personally, and we do this as groups, as societies and churches and nations and on. And we tell these truths because it's simply there. And some things are best left unsaid, gives the aphorism. And often it is those that we're speaking about that can be some of the most awkward things about us. Even one of those most foundational assumptions that we all start with is one of the assumptions that we don't talk about. And that's simply this. We're all sinners. Every last one of us are sinners. But by and large, that's not where we go on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. Preferring more the, well, we try, and we're good enough. And ultimately, I think that's okay. As right as this may be, we keep coming back to, there's a qualified freedom in the truth. We don't always know what to do with it. Because at the end of it all, the truth and telling you nothing but the truth is something that it doesn't do well in social situations. Think of the old archetype of that's in mind for comedic effect a number of times, of the person who tells too much truth, either by a spell or whatever, and it's just held out there. There's no quicker way to portray the fish out of water than to have someone speak the things that you know don't say that all the time. Harder still are those places where we know the truth, hard truth, exists on both sides of the story. I had occasion to accompany a gentleman who had a very unfortunate series of events. He was a truck driver by profession, and either by fatigue or something else, he was involved in a fatal crash. And I had the opportunity to walk with him to his sentencing hearing. And actually, some distance in a couple provinces away, we drove together. And to talk about that, and to actually drive up and stop at the location with the crosses marking the deaths. And then to be in the courtroom for the victim impact statements and to sit and hear the tales of loss and the truth of loss alongside the truth of regret and remorse and someone who has lost their livelihood and lost their family and is now going to lose 2.5 years of his life in prison. It's tough. It's all tough. Sometimes the truth of the facts and the truth of our realities are two different things entirely. I think that Jesus is getting at exactly this interchange of the various truths in our world. And he's in this place because he's in the temple debating yet again with the teachers and the Pharisees of the law. And they get into this and say, well, but what is the truth that is offering here? What are we about? And this is his response. The truth, the deep truth, as dangerous as it is, as hard as it is, as weird as it is, does set us free. And just by way of context, this chapter 8 is part of this running debate with the Pharisees in John that ends him up with them picking up stones and trying to stone him and him, according to John, just sort of hiding and passing out of their midst. Poof. So all sorts of curious things going on here. What this interchange sounds like to me is that the Pharisees don't like what Jesus has to say because it hits too much on their core truths. He's standing up and saying, look it. Salvation is of God, yes, but salvation is free and doesn't have a whole lot to do with the law. And that's the thing that they value the most, the reality that they are who they are, that they control what they control, that they do what they do. And not liking what they're hearing, they go back to their fundamental truth and saying, wait. We're sons of Abraham. We do all the right things. We do what we know is true. We are part of the truth. And now you're telling this is wrong? We can't be slaves to this. How dare you tell us that there's something else going on? Never mind the fact that they oddly choose to forget that one of the defining arcs of their story is the fact that they were enslaved in Egypt. But we'll lay that aside. But Jesus is insistent. If you want to be like Abraham, he says, you need to take a look at who and what you are, even when you need to be changed into something new. Your genetics, your way, your parentage, none of that matters. When it comes down to doing who and what you are. And that hurts. But the greatest thing about that hurt is that it holds us in the darkness of the world that we construct beyond our truth. Because we can convince ourselves of what is true only to find something else at the other end. Because one of the most controlling thoughts that we can have is, oh, but if they actually knew who and what I am, they wouldn't like me, they wouldn't do anything with me, they wouldn't be there. And sometimes the greatest liberty that we can find is to know that that truth doesn't happen to be all that true. I remember one of my only trips to the principal's office. in elementary school, I had recycled, let's say, the water out of a spiral notebook from the trash after the teacher explicitly told me to leave it in the trash. And what else do you do with a good springy water but to wave it around your head around other people? And surprise, surprise, it was all fun and games until somebody's eye got hurt, requiring a little bit of medical attention along the way. And of course, I was found out. And I was sent to see the principal. And for whatever reason, it was a Friday, and the principal wasn't able to deal with me that afternoon. So instead, I was given the whole weekend to think about what I'd done and to anticipate my appointment with destiny. And of course, this is still when the principal was kind enough to display the paddle behind his desk. And so I spent the whole weekend explicitly imagining in detail what exactly was going to happen and how that was going to all work out. And I went to school on Monday morning quite convinced that my time was up. And naturally, when Monday came and the time it was time to face the music, I was far more tearful and weepy than was actually the case, and simply came down to, yeah, you don't need to do this, and you're going to have detention for a while. Now let's get on with life. Once the truth was told and owned, I was freed from the bondage of the container that I constructed for that secret and the potential of harm that was there. Truth is like that. It can scare us. We can resist it and we can hide from it. And Jesus is saying the truth of all of God's love can be crushing in the moment. But oh, once you're done being crushed, once you're past it, then there is freedom. Then there is something else. I think again of our time in Canada. I came right at the end of the truth and reconciliation process there. And Emily actually attended some of the hearings in Saskatchewan where people told the stories of what it was like to go to a residential school, what it was like to be told that your skin color needed to be washed off, that your cultural marker wasn't there, that your language was dirty, and the impacts of time and again being told that you're wrong. And even from afar, these stories were painful, painful to hear. And to be sure, no miracles have happened since. A large document was produced and a lot of recommendations and a lot of work has to happen. But what was said quite often was, oh, but this was the first time that anybody actually heard what really happened and what it mean and what it means to me to hold this. Because I think one of the things that we get confused with the truth is that it can only be one thing. We make it truth, capital T, which there is such a thing. Don't get me wrong. But it's not only that. There are the facts of what happened. There is the reality of what took place, and that is the objective truth. But there's also the reality of what it meant to somebody and how it changes somebody and what it does to somebody having lived that objective truth. And we're addicted to the notion that if we can only get the facts, if we can only get the notions, and we can only settle the objective truth, then we'll understand everything and we can make it there. Our system's bias, just the facts, ma'am, sort of way of storytelling, and we miss the way and the other truths that are involved of, this is how it made me feel. This is what it meant. This is how it impacts me. One of the powers of restorative justice is that it takes into account the subjective truth, not just the objective truth, and brings those stories together to try to knit it all together in some sort of reconciliation. It connects people back into the messy bits of life that we'd rather ignore and disregard as irrelevant, but also says, no, all of it's together, all of it's relevant, all of it's there. And when we tell the truth together, all of the truth together, we are better for it, and we're free within it. Because when we tell only the facts, only the way and the objective reality of things, it dehumanizes the situation to such a point that we can't establish that the impact of the facts matter just as much as the facts themselves. And we might be able to address this, but we'll never address the subjective feeling of it. And we know that this is important because we know it's important in our relationships, no matter what form that they are. What we did about the dishes often is far less important than the look on our face as we did it. And how did that get read and interpreted and known? And that brings up its own thing. All of this is fine analysis, I'll grant you. Well, maybe you can debate that too, but I'm guessing by now you're thinking, fine, great, Bryce, but now what? I think there's a lot of power in acknowledging that we need to work at hearing the voices that are outside of ourselves. And this is hard, hard work. And I think right now we're dealing with a time where we're hearing a lot of voices that we're simply not used to hearing. Because it is easier to hear. It is easier to tell your story. It is easier to get published in a loud way. And we forget that when history gives us a new way to tell our stories, everything gets turned on its head for a while. It happened 500 years ago in the religious Reformation driven by the printing press. And it happened in the media age of the 60s. And it's happening now when we all go digital and all can spread our opinions however and whenever we wish. And now we have to listen time and again to say, no, this is true for me. And that's hard. I think this is what Jesus is getting at when he invites the leaders to think past what they know to be true about Abraham and all the rest, and to live into what is fully true about the working spirit of Yahweh God, the Son and Spirit and Father at play within the kingdom before them. It may not sound what you're used to, But the truth is there, and the truth has freedom within. For us, that means there's work in hearing stories and hard stories of hurt and injury and pain and valuing those stories, even while we say, yes, and now what? Because when we hear the truth from somebody, something that, a perspective that is not our own, it is hard and painful. Because sometimes that subjective truth can say things about me that I'm not happy about. But I think there is something to honoring all our stories together that brings out the holy within all of them. It's a challenge. It's a challenge in our nearest relationships. It's a challenge in our wider world. But to quote my era's popular culture, the truth is indeed out there. It's just a good deal more messy than we ever thought it could be. In hearing, in really hearing, we can extend the love of Christ and the freedom within Christ time and again. Not because it's easy, not because it makes everything okay, but often because one of the biggest signs that we have to say you are loved is to simply hear what the other is saying. And that's powerful. And that has truth. When we receive the truth and know the hand of God within it, we are given this assurance that God will meet us within it, whatever it might be. For when truth, full truth, deep truth, messy truth is shared and known, there is freedom on the other side, if we can only get there. Indeed, this is the only thing that ever really has freed us. May we go about seeking the truth together and seeking freedom together in all the ways that God would offer it to us. Amen.